train slides into Södertälje, a pleasant green city on a lake 20 miles from Stockholm. It doesn't drip milk and honey, but for some, this is the promised land.
There's no war here, that's the first thing, and the second thing is everything is better here and it's not as hot as in Iraq. Actually, everything is different from Iraq. The services, the hospitals are better here. Everything is better here.
The bronze statue of a boy pouring water from a shell stands in the city square of Södertälje, surrounded by neat, bright bushes of flowers, occasional elegant 19th century mansions amid the more nondescript modern buildings. This used to be a spa town, but now it's known for something else. It's refugees. Syrian music pumps from a hairdresser's in an area of town called Rona Centrum. The pine-covered hillside is dotted with seven-story apartment blocks, crammed with people. This city took in more Iraqis after the war than the US and Canada combined, and now is home to thousands of Syrians as well. Half the population of 65,000 are foreign-born, mostly refugees from war.
Hello. تم العراق هم شوية.
I ask Yelda, an elderly woman in a headscarf, what she thinks of Sweden. She just says, blessed, blessed land, and repeatedly kisses her hands.
نعمة 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 بسلامتكم نعمة مشكور.
Sweden does have a policy that seems almost extravagantly generous. In 2014, half the Syrians applying for asylum were given permanent residence. The other half were allowed to stay for 3 years. All that has now changed. With impeccable Scandinavian logic, the government says anyone fleeing Syria's brutal civil war deserves permanent asylum, whether they've been personally threatened or not. The hard-right Swedish Democrats think that's absurd. In last year's election, they got 13% of the vote and their first ever MPs. Now they've risen to 17% in the polls. Their integration spokesperson, MP Paula Birilo, says it's the appeal of their tough line on immigration.
There are no jobs, there are no place in schools, no place to live. And when the other parties say that there are absolutely no problems and we will just have to put in more money and give special advantages so that people get into the society, of course that will rise some feelings with the population who lived here before. And we have been saying all the time that there are, of course, positive effects, but there are also negative ones, and we have to deal with them.
What do you think when you see the sort of scenes on television from Calais, people trying to get into Britain? Whose fault is that?
I think it's mostly the ones who say that as long as you get here, we will give you everything, because we cannot give them everything. And that kind of policy makes people take the risk.
Seagulls flap around Södertälje's lake as Sweden's oldest lock goes into operation. A road bridge opens and swings up, halting the flow of cars, allowing a procession of boats to make their lazy way forward. It's an idyllic scene, but there are tensions here. There's a fierce debate in this town, in the whole of Sweden in fact, whether immigration has put such a strain on schools that the education of native-born Swedish-speaking children has suffered. Lina Axelsson Schilleblun was a head teacher here and is now director of education for 18 primary schools in the region. She thinks that's nonsense.
All students in Sweden are producing less results now than they did 20 years ago. So we can't say that it depends on the immigrants. It's actually a schooling system that is having lots of problems.
And but some people do blame the immigrants.
Yeah, of course they will. They will always blame immigrants. They will blame the poor. They will blame the fat people if they could.
The attitude towards immigration, the very, very open, particularly towards refugees and to asylum seekers, that is now being challenged in a way that it hasn't been previously.
No, I think we had the biggest groups moving around in the world now than we've seen since the Second World War. So, of course, people are afraid. But looking at history, there is normally not a problem. So the people coming now, in 5 years' time, they will be your neighbours and your best friends if we welcome them in a collective and good way. If we choose to look at them as as something else, then they will never become part of the society. Then we have a big problem. So the problem is not them, the problem is us.
In the supermarket, the shelves are crammed with Swedish pancakes and jam alongside olives, pine nuts and pistachios, the sort of cultural mash-up that's common from Birmingham to Berlin. But only Arabic is spoken here, and head of the Assyrian Federation of Sweden, Asram Yaqub, says this is a ghetto, a comfortable, pleasant, calm one, but a ghetto nonetheless.
The problem is when you have a big community, most of them, those people from Syria and Iraq, they tend to stick to each other, and that stops the integration. And this has sparked a debate. We haven't had this debate really so strong in Sweden before about volumes, about how many can we actually take. And you feel the strains on the society. I sympathize with this because I believe that we're doing ourselves a disservice if we take in too many. If you take in too many and the system can't handle this volume, you'll create problems in Sweden. And that's not good for anyone.
Outside the parliament buildings in Stockholm, South American buskers do a brisk business. Inside, Morgan Johansson, the Swedish Minister for Justice and Migration, is entirely unapologetic about Sweden's wide-open door. He says if you look at the actual figures, the European Union is like an island of 1,000 people arguing about what to do about one scary arrival, a man in a boat. And Calais is, he thinks, the result of flawed policies and bad intentions.
I think UK could do a lot more than the UK is doing. I'm seeing what's now developing in Calais and Dover. I don't know the numbers now, how many people who are actually coming to Britain, but in Sweden now we have a situation where roughly 1,000 or 1,200 people are arriving each week to Sweden. And of course we could set up some borders to Denmark, because you have a tunnel to France, we have a bridge to Denmark, but then we would end up in exactly the same situation as you are now.
Do you think that's worse than allowing people in and having a strain on your system, which is presumably what the British government is worried about?
Well, the basis for our policy is that it's a human right to apply for asylum, especially now when 60 million people are refugees in the world. So when we hear the rhetoric of some countries, including the Prime Minister of United Kingdom,
he used the word swarm the other day.
Yes, and not only that, but also calling every people who are trying to get to Great Britain as illegal. Well, they are not illegal when they are coming to a country to apply for asylum. That's not illegal, and Europe should be able to solve this in a more civilized way than we are doing now.
What do you think when you see the sort of scenes at Calais of people trying to get into Kent, into the United Kingdom?
Well, I see a system that is breaking down. I see a country who doesn't want to, countries, France is also a part of this, who doesn't want to take the responsibility that they should.
So you think we would be better off following the Swedish way?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Then you shouldn't have this situation that you're having now. There are two kinds of politicians. There's one kind looking at what is different between groups or people, and then trying to widen the gaps, and also sometimes spreading the prejudice. But then there is another kind of people, politicians also, saying that, well, let's build on what is actually common between different groups, and let's try to live together.
Of the two types of politician you identified, which is Mr. Cameron?
I hear what he's saying about illegal immigrants and about swarms and everything like that. I think he's actually trying to divide people, and that's not a constructive way.